in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth with those simple yet sublime words the Bible opens, as I'm sure every one of you knows. They're really words of great significance. And as it has been pointed out by others, if you believe Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1, you have no problem believing the rest of the Bible. You have no problem believing that God would love those that inhabit His creation. You have no problems believing that that God would send His Son to redeem mankind. You have no problems believing in the great miracles that we read about throughout the Scriptures. If we can believe that in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, then the rest of the book pretty much falls into place. And indeed, throughout the Scriptures, this affirmation that God is the Creator is upheld both in Old Testament and New Testament alike. We find that in the affirmations of the Scriptures that God created the heavens and the earth, such things as deceptions, such as evolution, are dismissed. It gives man a proper understanding of his place in the scheme of things. Mankind is not supreme, but rather is the creature. Mankind is the product of a creative God. And so throughout the Bible, this truth is indeed reiterated, that God created. And it is affirmed in the New Testament Scriptures as well as the Old Testament Scriptures. Ephesians chapter 3 and verse 9, we find where Paul declares that God created all things. Colossians 1 and verse 16, he there affirms that by Him, that is by God, all things were created. And so, over and over again, in what I would characterize for our purposes of our study tonight as just general statements, we see this affirmed repeatedly throughout the Scriptures. Generally, recognitions being given that God is the one who created all. But I want to talk to you this evening about something a bit more specific that's related to the creation of this universe by God. I want to talk to you about not so much these general statements about the Lord's creation, but I want to talk to you about three fundamental truths that are affirmed in the New Testament but are directly tied to this truth that God, in the beginning, created the heavens and the earth. Now, these, as I say, are not general statements, but rather they are statements of fact that are based upon the creation. In other words, these are things that that are said to be true because of creation. Now, for instance, the first that I would bring to your attention is what Scriptures have to say about marriage and how it is related to creation. Over in the book of Matthew, a passage I'm sure that you're familiar with, in Matthew chapter 19, we find where Jesus is being confronted by a group of Jewish leaders, Pharisees, who in verse 3 came to Him. The verse tells us they came to Him testing Him. That is, they were asking a question, not so much seeking truth, not to have explained to them something that they were having difficulty with comprehending and understanding, but rather they came testing. They came trying to trick Jesus and to cast Him in some kind of a bad light with the crowds that were, as we see in verses 1 and 2, that were thronging to him on this at this time. But the Pharisees came asking this question: is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any cause at all? And we're not going to spend a great deal of time talking about the issue of divorce this evening, but it was just exactly that. It was an issue. It was an issue among the Jews. There were different schools of thought, much like you might say that today there are different schools of thought that people take upon this issue. So they came asking this question, believing that some kind of controversy could be stirred and Jesus could be cast into a bad light. But Jesus, as he always did, gave an answer that they did not expect to hear, and one that completely thwarted their attempts to trick him and to show him to be unable to answer in an understandable way. And so Jesus provides this answer in verses 4 through 6. And I want you to notice with me how in his answer he ties this question about marriage and about divorcing in a marriage, he ties his answer directly to creation. He says that he answered and said, "Have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female, and said, 'For this cause a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh?' Consequently, they are no more two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let no man separate." Notice that Jesus says this all goes back, the answer to this goes back to the beginning. It goes back to creation. It goes back to the time that God created the heavens and the earth, and how he eventually in that creation created mankind, and the nature of what God created when he created man and woman. It goes back to the nature of that relationship that he created on that occasion. Creation is the basis of his answer. Marriage is what it is by virtue of its connection to creation. Because of creation, this relationship between a husband and wife is what it is. It is a male and a female relationship. He created them male and female. An answer that is not particularly popular today, as much of our society, not only in our country, but in other countries as well, are now embracing same-sex marriages. Jesus said, here's the way God created. Here's the way God established marriage. He established it between a male and a female, between a man and a woman. That's the nature of the relationship. But beyond that, the question that was raised was really not a question about a man and a woman, whether a man and a woman was the only way for there to exist a marriage. The Jews understood that was the only way for a proper marriage to exist. It was between a man and a woman. Their question related to divorce. And so Jesus' answer also related to divorce. His answer that grew out of creation and its explanation about marriage and the nature of marriage demonstrated that it was to be a permanent relationship. He continued on in verses 5 and 6, "For this cause," because he made them male and female, "for this cause then, a man will leave his father and mother and will cleave to his wife. The two shall be one flesh." Haven't you read this? Was his question to them. The consequence, he says, of this fact growing out of creation is they are no more two, but one flesh. "What therefore God has joined together, let no man separate." Here's Jesus' direct answer to their question being, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any cause? He says it is the nature of this relationship from the very beginning that it is to be a permanent one. Let no one separate what God has joined together. A number of years ago, there was a TV program called Who Wants to Marry a Millionaire? Maybe you remember it. And there would be a contestant on the show who was some fabulously wealthy individual. And then there would be contestants on the show, people trying to be chosen in order to marry this individual. And at the end of the season, the person would make the choice between all of these who were vying to be married to the millionaire. On one occasion, when the show came to its end and the choice was being made, the person who was chosen, it was a woman, the woman who was chosen was asked, well, as you enter this marriage with John, who has picked you to be his wife, how do you see this relationship working out, going from this point now that you've been declared the winner of the program? And her explanation was, well, if we don't fall in love, then we can make other arrangements. Well, that's pretty much the attitude that many, many people go into a marriage today. If it doesn't work out, that's okay. We'll go our separate ways. We'll make other arrangements. And so with a very light, flippant kind of attitude towards the relationship, it's no wonder that so many end in divorce. If we understood the significance of what God established back at the very beginning when He created this relationship, it is not, as some would contend, the product of some social development that somehow in human society, as human society evolved, that we developed this relationship. Not so. It was a relationship designed and created and set into place by God with the intent of being that which was a lifelong relation. There arose an issue as Jesus talked about these things. In verse 7, we see where His questioners responded to His answer by saying, why then did Moses command to give her a certificate and divorce her? Why was it that, as it was indeed true within the law of Moses, that there were provisions made for a divorce? Why is that so? Well, Jesus answers that as well. When He said, because of your hardness of heart, Moses permitted you to divorce your wife. But from the beginning, it has not been this way. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for immorality and marries another commits adultery. Jesus' answer to their secondary question, why did Moses speak about divorce? His answer was, well, he did it because of the hardness of the hearts of men and women who would live under the law of Moses. It was an allowance. It was indeed permitted. But the intent of the relationship was that it was to be continuous. It was to be ongoing. It was to be a permanent relationship in God's design. And so Jesus would say, even recognizing this permission of one in which there was impurity, one in which there was unfaithfulness on the part of one who was in the marriage. Whoever divorces his wife, he goes on to say in verse 9, except for immorality, and marries another, commits then adultery. But I want you to see that all of this, admittedly foreign to to the minds and the thinking of many people today, all of it, as Jesus sets it forth here, grows out of God's creative act. You and I want to understand the proper relationship that is to exist between ourselves and our mate. We need to see it in the light of creation and what God established at that time. Now, there's a second thing I want you to think with me about, and that is the issue of male headship or male leadership, either in the home or in the church. That was an issue. It became an issue in the first century. A question that was addressed by the Apostle Paul. Just as it is an issue today, as many today would reject the notion of there being a role of leadership assigned to those that are males, as opposed to those that are female. Look in 1 Timothy, if you would, in chapter 2. There the Apostle Paul says in verses 11 through 13, "Let a woman quietly receive instruction with entire submissiveness. But I do not allow a woman to teach or exercise authority over a man, but to remain quiet. For it was Adam who was first created, then Eve." Why is it so? I think that perhaps you would not get a great deal of argument from people that there is this element of teaching in the New Testament that male leadership is appropriate. Now, you'd get a great deal of argument about whether or not that was going to be accepted. But most people would say, sure, Paul teaches that. They would attribute it to a woman-hating attitude on the part of the Apostle Paul. But they would probably acknowledge that it's there. Well, why is it there? Why does Paul say that this is to be the case, that there is expected a submissive role to be occupied by a woman? Is it because she's of some secondary importance? Is it because she's not as good as a man? Clearly, the New Testament teaches that that's not the case. Well, some would say, no, really, what it is it's because a woman is in a submissive role to a man because Eve sinned. It's basically punishment because of the sin that she committed in the garden. But that's not Paul's answer here. When Paul addresses this matter and says that this is expected, this submissive role of a woman, when he says this is what is appropriate, this is as it ought to be, he ties it back to the beginning. He doesn't tie it to Eve's sin. He says there in verse 13, "For it was Adam who was first created, and then Eve." It is in creation where we see God creating Adam. And then as Adam is placed in the garden and he tends the garden, and we see him naming the various animals, and he goes through and he names all the animals. We come to the second chapter of Genesis, and we see the statement is made that God saw that it was not good that man was alone. All of the other creatures had their companions. They were male and female. But not Adam. And so God causes a sleep to come over Adam, and he takes a rib from Adam's side, and from that rib he fashions a woman, Eve, who is described as a help suitable to him. Some, a King James Version, says that she was a help meet for him. And so a lot of times you would hear brethren talk about, well, you know, woman is a help meet. What in the world is a help meet? Well, what that word meet, M-E-E-T, means is suitable. She is a help suitable to him. She is suitable as a companion to him. She was created for that role. This is Paul's answer as to why it should be that a woman would occupy willingly, because that's the only way that a person is submissive, ever. You cannot coerce submission. But we choose to be submissive. And the only reason that a woman is given for choosing that submissive role is because of creation. That this was the purpose for which she was created. Now, Paul continues on. In verse 14, he says, "And it was not Adam who was deceived, but the woman, being quite deceived, fell into transgression." Ah, there it is. You see, it's her punishment because of what she did back there in the garden. No, what Paul said was the reason for her submission is because Adam was created first and then Eve. And but Eve did sin. Eve did sin first. Now, some folks might say, okay, well, now then, here we get to it. Paul doesn't like women. He's this old bachelor who doesn't like women, and now he's putting all the blame on her. You know, the fact of the matter is, when you in the New Testament, when you come down to talking about sin, the original sin, and the guilt for the original sin, the blame gets put on Adam, not on Eve. She was deceived. She was deceived first, and then she encouraged Adam in the deception. But Adam willingly participated in what Eve was doing. I'll tell you what this sets out before us. That is, we're responsible for when we are deceived. When we're deceived about something, be it some false doctrine or whatever, when we are deceived, we are held responsible for it, just like Adam was. Paul says that Eve was indeed deceived, and she did indeed fall into transgression. But he continues on and says that women shall be preserved through the bearing of children if they continue in faith and love and sanctity with self-restraint. Now, what he's doing in verses 14 and 15 is acknowledging that Eve committed sin. Well, what's going to be deliverance for her? What's going to be deliverance from sin for all women? It's abiding in this relationship established from the very creation, from the very beginning, that she live as a godly woman should, declared in other places in the Scriptures, that she would live in this submissive role, that she would occupy the place of being one that would bear children, that she would live in that within that role of a woman, of a godly woman. She would live within it in faith and in love and in sanctity, exercising self-restraint. I mean, it's no accident that the Savior of mankind was given birth into this world by a woman. And it's no accident that what God looks to a woman for is to live in this role that He established from the very beginning. I've told you before here that one of my concerns as a father of two daughters is that they not fall prey to the very common view that is expressed, you know, by people today in our culture. That these views that are expressed in the scriptures are woman-hating, out-of-date, irrelevant kinds of things that ought to be just dismissed and never given serious consideration. And I hope, as I'm sure it's true for all of you who are fathers of daughters, I hope that my daughters will see that their role as women is established not by the church, not by preachers, not by some woman-hating apostle, as some would characterize Paul, but it's established from the very beginning of time when God created woman and He gave her a place in relationship to man, and He expects her to live by that. There's a third way in which the New Testament speaks about the creation and its relevance to a very important matter, and that is in regards to mankind's worship. If you turn over to the book of Revelation, the fourth chapter, we find the Apostle John giving a description of a vision that he saw, a vision of heaven, a vision of the throne room of God. And in verse 9, he says that when the living creatures, that is, creatures that he saw in this vision, when the living creatures give glory and honor and thanks to Him who sits on the throne, to Him who lives forever and ever, the 24 elders will fall down before Him who sits on the throne and will worship Him who lives forever and ever, and will cast their crowns before the throne, saying, "Worthy art Thou, our Lord and our God, to receive glory and honor and power. For Thou didst create all things, and because of Thy will they existed and were created." In this heavenly scene, we have depicted those that are casting their crowns before the throne of God, and they are worshiping Him, praising Him, giving Him glory and honor and power, attributing these to Him and to Him alone. Why? Well, they're very clear as to why. Because of creation. You created all things. You caused these things to exist by virtue of Your will. And as a result of it being Your will that they be created, they were created. Now that's true in heaven. That's true of this heavenly vision that John sees. But it's true as well for mankind. Think about some of the things that are revealed in scriptures regarding worship and worship by men. John, the fourth chapter, tells of Jesus is encountering the woman of Samaria at the well. And she introduces immediately in their conversation a question about worship. Our fathers, we Samaritans, believe it's in this mountain that we should worship, but you Jews say that it's in Jerusalem. And so Jesus engages in a discussion with her about worship by men and women. And He says that God's desire is to be worshiped. He wants worship from men and women. And He goes on and talks to her about worshiping in spirit and in truth. But why should men and women worship God? It's because God is their creator. Acts, the 17th chapter, you find where the Apostle Paul goes into the city of Athens. He looks around and he sees all these, these representations of the gods that they worship and they honor. And he says to them that what you worship in ignorance, I declare to you. And then immediately he goes into the explanation of how all things that exist are the product of God's creation. The living God that he was explaining to them and identifying to them. Why should they worship him? Why should they set aside these other their idols and their loyalties to these other gods? Because those other gods didn't create anything. They, in fact, were the product of man's creation. But Paul says, I'm talking to you about the God who created everything. And therefore, he is the God, and only he is the God who should be worshipped. In the songs that we sang this evening, several times we attributed to God the worthiness of our worship. In our prayer, Brother West directed our thoughts along these very same lines, that because God created us and because we are his creatures, the product of his creation, that we owe him worship. Now we can accept and enjoy this fact, or we can reject it and resent it. There is a tremendous value in recognizing our station in life as a creature. And until we recognize this, we will fail to fulfill our purpose in life. Matthew, the 4th chapter, in the 10th verse, the issue of worship came up there in that confrontation between Jesus and Satan. You'll recall how Satan says, I'll give you all of these worlds. He showed him all the kingdoms of the world. I'll give you all of this, all that's contained within it, if you'll just fall down and worship me. And Jesus said, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve. Why? Creation. He made us. In these three ways, the New Testament teaches us we need to think about and appreciate the significance that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Is that something that you acknowledge? That he created you? That you are the product of his work all those centuries ago? Then are you living your life in a way that recognizes that and gives acquiescence to him? Jesus said, him only shall you worship. Him only shall you serve. If you're not serving him this night, then you need to begin doing so. If you believe that he is the Creator, then you will have no problems believing that he sent his son to die for you, that you might be saved, because he wants to save his creature. He loves us. He doesn't want to see us lost. If you would be saved this night with faith in Jesus Christ, turn away from your sins. Confession being made that you believe in Jesus, be baptized. Wash the guilt of your sins away. And then spend the rest of your days recognizing the significance that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Won't you come to him tonight while we stand and sing?